bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello, welcome to the Photo Show. I'm Ewan Rankin, and we're here to discuss the week's photo news, not that there is much, and then answer your questions. If you want to send your questions in, then all you got to do is send them to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com, and we'll include them and answer them, I promise. We've got three doozies this week. I'm joined by the fantastic twosome, Carl is still out on the road working, of Mr. Alex Fox and Mr. Chris Forsman. Mr. Forsman, how the devil are you?
Pretty good today. Pretty good. How are you?
I'm all right. I just say, Alex, before we started, I feel like I'm on the treadmill. The usual running at a million miles an hour and then stopping and then having to get out and run at a million miles an hour again the following day. Next to him, we've got the fantastic as well, Mr. Alex G. Fox.
Good morning, afternoon, wherever you are.
What's happening, brother?
I don't know what's happening. I've been working. Good I've lad. Been relaxing.
Consulting, nay.
I know, someone had to listen to my crap.
Yes. Good week?
Yes, not bad at all, thank you very much.
Right, we'll get straight into it then. Polaroid.
Let's do it.
I've jumped out a new camera. The only people that we take the piss out of more than Pentax, Polaroid. they've released the Z2300, or if you're an American, it's a Z2300 instant photo in a point-and-shoot body. So this is basically a block-body digital camera that takes 10 megapixels and then 2 to 3 seconds later will spit out a hard copy photo at 2 by 3 inches. Mm-hmm. what do we think, fellas? $160.
Well, for $150, $160, it's not bad. What you're basically looking at is sort of, I think, Polaroid's literal interpretation of an Instagram camera.
Yeah, it's got the stripes.
Mm-hmm. Which were inspired by Polaroid originally, so.
Maxim in the chat room is already suggesting it's specifically purposed for the passport picture market.
No, not with that lens, it's not. But I did a review of the Pogo printer some years ago, which is this, you know, it was a small portable zinc printer that had this 2x3 size, and the prints aren't that bad.
Polaroid bought Zinc, yes.
I don't think they own Zinc. I think there's some kind of contractual relationship of some kind, but I don't think they own them.
Right.
I think Zinc's an independent company. But it's an interesting technology. It's Zinc, you know, it stands for zero ink, and the paper has these special dye crystals in them. And then as the paper comes out the printer, it uses heat to, you know, activate the crystals and change them into different colors. You know, you don't have to worry about ribbons like you do with dye sublimation, which can be a real hassle.
And they get really bad dust issues, especially if you were carrying this around in your pocket or something. The dust issues would be unbearable.
Right. And you don't have to worry about the ink linking in your pocket or anything like that. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's pretty easy. You just toss the paper in the printer and go. I think for what it is, it's an interesting idea. I'd really like to see, you know, because the single focal length, the 10 megapixel sensor, I mean, it looks like it's pretty much, you know, not even iPhone level components, like,
no, you know, I mean, we're talking
cheap smartphone components here.
720p video, 10 megapixels. The paper costs for 30 prints, it's $15. For 50 prints, it's $25. So, Alex, any thoughts?
Yeah, it's like sticking a pretty crappy lens on a color printer that comes out. You know, when you go and buy something from a shop and they print off the till roll. So it's like sticking a crappy lens on a colour till roll printer and then paying an awful lot of money for the prints.
So you're not buying one?
I didn't say that.
Be perfect for the kids.
I'm going to buy one and get a Sharpie icon on it and then ship it to you.
Okay. The running costs are the problem, to be honest. I mean, yeah, it's a bit of fun. And yeah, I'd be honest, if you were, well, let me think of a use. You know, I go to quite a lot of corporate events and they want to stick a you know, they make you up a badge as you walk in. Well, this is great. You can take a picture of the person and stick a label on the bottom, turn it into a badge, and you can all walk around the conference with a picture of a smiley face and all the rest of it. That's a use. But
That's one sale. Check.
Yeah, there's one sale. And if you've got money to throw away, I mean, again, the camera doesn't cost anything. Well, camera cost-wise, but the running cost is what's going to kill you with this. I mean, it's a lovely idea, but, you know, at this sort of level of price and this running costs, you really need a print or something to come out of it that's keepable. Yeah. This isn't. This is, give it 6 months, a year. Unless you store these prints properly, they're not going to exist anyway.
I mean, now, go on, Chris.
I was going to say, I still have a handful of prints I made, and I think I reviewed the Pogo in 2008.
How have you stored those prints?
Just sitting in a stack of papers, really. And they look
subjected to light, have they?
Right. Yeah. They haven't been in direct sunlight. So I'd imagine that anything that gets really hot would affect them.
But if you run an iron over the top of them, does it go blank again?
That's a good question. I didn't even think.
Spend $160 and you'll find out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing that struck me with reading the story is the fact that you're saying there about Instagram straight away because of the look of the Polaroid stripe that Instagram have copied. I mean, this camera is going up against an iPhone effectively, which is why would I want to take my pictures and hand them physically to my friends as opposed to bang them out on Twitter and all of the people that are probably stood there will be able to get a copy anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to buy this and why?
I think the missing feature of this camera is Wi-Fi.
Well, if you've got Wi-Fi, you don't need the paper. So it's kind of one begat the other.
If you had Wi-Fi, then you could do both. You could be sending it to Twitter while you're making a print and handing it to someone. You know, for the people who aren't there, probably doesn't matter. For the people who are there, it's probably a nice, even if it's just a nostalgic anachronism, it's you know.
That's why we have
people. Are still sentimental.
He uses words like nostalgic anachronisms. That's why we have Chris Forsman on the show.
Yeah, expanding our vocabulary.
So
720p video as well. I mean, that's woeful in comparison. I mean, the size of video cameras now at 1080p, there's no way on God's green earth they couldn't have put it in there if it wasn't for the fact of just price, I would have said. Because price would have added, what, $100 to the top of that? And no one's going to buy this at $150. They certainly aren't going to buy it at $250.
Well, can you imagine how many pieces of paper you'd need to print off a 720p video?
Of a flip book.
And just to piss you off, they've done 60 frames a second, so 1 second costs you $30.
Exactly.
Thumbs up, thumbs down then, fellas.
I'm giving it a thumb in the middle.
Really?
I want to get my hands on it. I'll be honest, I'm not, after seeing the Z30 or Z340, I should say, I'm not too optimistic, but I feel like if the size and the weight are right, I think it could be fun for some people. So I'm reserving my judgment until I get my hands on it.
Well, I've got to say that we're having the bash here next week. We've got a pig roast. I've just booked it this morning. And that there is going to be more buzz created by the fat dripping off that pig into a tray than this camera is ever going to produce in a million years. I think. I may be being a bit harsh, but dripping pig fat would be well above Polaroid Z 2300 for me. Alex, your thoughts?
I think it's a different kind. I mean, we're looking at it as a camera as in what we normally think of a camera. I buy cameras that I can never use. They can't be used. I can't get the film. I can't get this, that, and the other because I buy them because I like photography. There's enough people out there that will buy this. Not because it's a great camera or it takes a great picture. It's because it's a Polaroid and they want the fun of instant photography. I had the Fuji, whatever it was. I can't even remember who it was. I had the Fuji version of this a few years ago and I used to knock out the odd prints and they used to just give them to people. We used to be, and it was a bit of fun. So on the level of having something for a little bit of fun, thumbs up. On the level of having something that's useful, thumbs down.
Hmm. No, I think it's. I think this is. This will be a doorstop before you know it.
Not a very strong one.
Absolutely.
I'd say I'm kind of coming from Alex's angle here. I think there's enough people that are just going to find it fun. And I'll be honest, I've got a Fuji Instax Mini 25 that I picked up at CES, and I like.
Yeah, you didn't pay for it.
Yeah, but it's not that expensive either.
The paper is.
And again, I've found some really good deals on Amazon, and I've already run through five packs of film through it that I did pay for out of my own pocket, and I've got a big sack of 10 more packs coming. So
I'm glad you finished that sentence.
So we'll move on. Paper. Is this FOAP or FOAP? FOAP app wants to sell your iPhone photographs. If you do Instagram shooting with filters on it, they're not particularly interested in having you, because I couldn't agree more. I think they're crap. And basically what they do is take your phone picture from the iOS app that you've used, and they'll sell it for $10 every time. And if they sell one, you get $5 and they get $5. So 50-50 split on income. They've already got 42,000 images uploaded. So this is kind of a reasonably decent stock site. 8 megapixels, it'd be good enough for a little brochure or something if you wanted to inset. Chris, for you, if you wanted something that was, you know, a story, image, that kind of thing, that would fit perfectly. I'm torn on this. I mean, I can see merits and I can see detractions, and the 50-50 thing as opposed to a 70-30 split, you know, you've kind of established that 70-30 split with manufacturers and Apple, so you'd have expected them to kind of follow that. But what do you think, Alex?
Well, 50-50 standard for a lot of the picture libraries I do, I work with. I don't ever put my images in it. I create the images for them, and I get paid for my images. I don't get involved in sharing the cost. I think it should, you're right, it's FOAP, but I think it should be FAUX, to be honest. I'm not really sure that this is right. I like the part where they say, you know what, if you're going to cover it in filters, then it's no good to us. Now, I like that. It just seems a bit, if the images are any good.
Yeah, but that's end user, not them. That's because they're selling it to a digital house who's like, look, we can do all of that ourselves. What we need is raw image, and we can then clone, et cetera, as much as we want, not what you want.
No, I agree. I mean, that's something I think is right. But I also think that there's a lot of companies out there that do this, and that if your image is any good, then put it on a proper stock site. I can't think of very many people that are going to go to an iPhoneography site before they go to a proper image site.
Yeah.
So if you're interested in doing this and you've got something worthwhile, you don't need to stick the standard is a minimum 50 meg on the sites, well, on the companies that I use, but it doesn't have to be 50 meg. You know, they probably do have iPhone sections. And I imagine you're going to get an awful lot more than $5 for an image that's used. I don't think this is the best place to put it.
Reportage up to 24 usually you can get away with, because that'll go black and white in a lot of cases. Or grainy print anyway on 70-point screens.
What do you get off an 8 meg camera? It's got to be 30-odd meg, isn't it? A 30 megabyte file?
TIFF? Yeah, probably.
So I don't think this is the right place to put it.
Probably about 24.
Oh, it's enough.
It's enough.
It's enough to do it.
It's enough to do reportage. Yeah.
Yeah. Chris, print.
Thoughts, Chris?
I mean, I feel like it's an interesting idea, because I literally take, I just downloaded the pictures that I took since January, a couple of weeks ago, off my iPhone, because it was starting to I couldn't update apps. All my memory was full. And I was like, what the heck? So I plugged it in and checked it, and I had like 1,200 pictures.
Why?
That I had taken since January. So I take a lot of pictures with my iPhone. The idea that I could toss some of them up on the web and maybe get $5 a pop if someone uses them is appealing. I agree that maybe there's not a lot of people that are looking for these kind of pictures, but I mean, even if one person pays for it and I get $5, that's $5 I was never going to get, you know, with these 1,200 pictures just sitting on my iPhone. So,
but you know, I'd imagine how many millions of pictures are going to be on this in 6 months?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they could have a very big stock site in a very short space of time and be making a tidy sum from it. I mean, I used to make a lot of money out of stock photography. I'd probably make, you know, £1,000 a month, maybe. I make nothing now. I haven't made a penny from stock photography in 2 years. I've got, you know, a couple of thousand images online, and I still don't make any money from it. It's a dead... the repositories are too big. I mean, when I started with... I got a lot of images with Alamy. I started there. There was 750,000 images on Alamy. There's now over 40 million images on Alamy. It's just ridiculous. It's impossible to find anything. You're just lost entirely. If your keywording's not perfect, forget it. Not happening. Never mind, eh? Iris is coming, allegedly. It's a concept camera that supposedly will... focus itself based on your eye. Well, based on my eyes, that's probably a bad thing. I gave up trying to shoot in manual about a year ago without glasses on a screen because it's just impossible to get a good focus. The idea of this thing is that you hold it up and you look into it, and whatever you focus on, the camera will mimic and then focus on as well as. I know it's a concept, but I thought at least a concept had to have a chance because I don't see how on God's green earth they're going to get this thing to work. It's a good idea, but it'll only ever be an idea. I can't see the physics happening.
Well, I watched the video of this, and it looks like Google Glasses, because it did have some things popping up to tell you what you were looking at.
Well, Google Glasses doesn't refocus.
No, but I'm saying the technology in this, what they were sort of trying to show in the video, they were at the Barbican Centre in London, and they were flicking around, and on the screen it said Barbican Centre, and they flicked around, and it said Guildhall, and things like that. So it seemed, the concept seemed to be saying to me it's got some sort of GPS, Wi-Fi, blah, blah, blah link. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You say this is a concept. I think it looks more pie in the sky than concept, to be honest.
Yeah, no,
that's what concepts are.
Yeah, well,
I could have a concept saying I'm going to walk to the moon next week in my great big bouncy boots. It doesn't, you know, it's all I've got to do is get my garden.
You kind of issue a concept when you feel like you've got the grasp of the physics that are required to achieve it, and I'm not sure that anyone's got a grasp of getting dressed in the morning at this place.
It's Mr. Magoo's Google Glasses.
It is Mr. Magoo. I mean, it's a long, long way away, I think, from ever being a reality. But
I agree with you 100%. I'm going to give another example.
Yeah,
I think it's been in the news lately for Apple users. But in 1992, a company called Knight Ridder, which was a huge publishing company, and I think they're still in existence, but I don't think they're quite the level they used to be back then. But they're a big publisher, and they came up with this idea for a news device. It was like a tablet, and you could, you know, you would hold it and you could look at things, and you could use your finger to point to different things and read different articles on it. And they made this concept video showing how it worked. And the whole thing was just a blank prototype. And then in post-production, they went in and put all these basically websites on the screen of it and all this stuff. Apple has been in these lawsuits with Samsung, so they sued Samsung over the Galaxy Tab, blah de blah. Samsung comes back and says Apple has no rights to the exclusive design of the iPad because here is this idea someone came up with in the 90s that kind of looks like it. Idea is, and at the time it was made, the technology did not exist. I mean, it was 20 years ago. They couldn't have pulled it off 20 years ago.
Yeah, but I've got a real problem with someone sitting there and going, I'll tell you what, you know, Gene Roddenberry thought of interstellar flight years and years ago, and this idea of subspace. And even if subspace becomes true, you can't tell me that the Roddenberry estate now holds patent on frigging subspace. You know, I mean, it just... You have to know that something exists. You have to be able to understand the physics to have a concept and a patent idea and prior art on it. And you can't just throw back to someone, you know, who sat down one morning to have a crap and whilst wiping thought of, I tell you what if the Earth was round?
Okay, and I'm sorry that I got us off on a tangent arguing about what's patents and what's not.
No.
That's irrelevant to the point I'm trying to make is that people make these concept videos all the time for products that they can't necessarily produce given the technology that exists.
I want to see
What they're thinking about is, what if 10, 20 years from now, technology exists where I can make something like this?
No, I like the idea of coming up with something.
That's what these concept videos do.
No, I agree. I like the idea of them coming up with something, as long as it's not with the intention of suing someone 20 years down the line.
Right.
Because I'd like Jules Verne to sue NASA. And if anyone ever does do time travel, whoever wrote Back to the Future can go after them. You know, it's nonsense. I mean, I can come up with really good ideas.
They could go back to the future and actually sue them.
Rights to anything. Making a movie doesn't give you rights to anything.
Well, this is a movie.
But it doesn't give you the rights to any ideas.
No, I know.
You can't even patent an idea.
Yeah, but if someone says, well, I invented that, then I've got a problem. I'm with Alex on that one.
Right. Making a concept doesn't mean that you invented something. It means and this video in particular, I mean, designers do this stuff all the time. This is what industrial designers do in school and their jobs. This is what they sit around all day is thinking of, what if this technology existed? What if this material, what if I can mold this material this way? How could I use it?
And how'd you get paid for that job?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Someone puts taxes on something and then you get a grant. And then the grant, I'm getting annoyed now.
So going back to this concept camera idea.
It makes you so mad that they just sat around and were like, what if we could demonstrate this idea we have to people?
Bloody philosophers.
I mean, there's students out there doing that on marijuana every day.
Plato, you lazy bastard.
Exactly. You didn't prove anything. You just postulated.
Exactly. Sure. I postulate every morning and then wipe.
Oh, dear.
Right. Lightroom 4 has gone cloud. There's a subscription service out there for you to go and have a play with. Creative Cloud app, unquote. $75 month to month or $50 on a year long contract. So you can cancel at any time on $75 and take a full year at $50. That $50 sounds pretty good. That's $50, not $50 per month, that's $50.
Yeah, no, it's 50 months per month, but you get the full.
Oh, it's per month.
You get the full Adobe CS6 Master Suite. And what this story is saying is they finally updated Lightroom 4 to be part of the suite, because beforehand, the only part of the suite that hadn't updated yet was Lightroom.
Yeah, I mean, Russ in the chat room saying he's got Creative Cloud subscription. He says it's brilliant.
Yeah.
So
I think I've mentioned before that I'm getting on this train, because I can come up with $50 a month, but I can't come up with $2,600 every 18 months.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that it's tax deductible doesn't hurt. I mean, it's a very clever thing what Adobe has done in this case. I mean, not so much Lightroom 4, but business-wise, it makes so much sense to be able to, you know, put against your taxes that $50 a month, rather than having to have a big outlay that most companies, small companies anyway, I don't want to go and spend another £2,000 on something or whatever it happens to be, or even the update prices are so expensive. But, you know, I can, even if I have that over 2 or 3 years, I actually end up costing me vastly more, because I can't claim back most of that. And I can claim back part of that. Mm-hmm. So it's got depreciation and things, but it doesn't work in the same. This is the most sensible way for any small business, or probably big business as well, to get hold of the software.
Well, and the great thing is you can download and use any of the Creative Suite apps at any time.
Yeah, it's all compatible with the touch stuff as well, isn't it? Mobile touch stuff.
Updates are instant as well. It's not like, having to do a great... I mean, it is a really, really clever idea. And I think Adobe must be working on the principle that they're going to sell a hell of a lot more on this than they ever did with the other version, because of, you know, price-wise, it's far, far more cost-effective.
Now, with your application... You then also, with your subscription, you get Adobe's, you get their, what am I looking at? I've lost the place. You get Photoshop Extended, Premiere Pro, After Effects, and Lightroom. You get 20 gig of cloud storage, free site creation, and compatible with Adobe's Touch mobile apps. I say, yeah, buy one, you get one free. it's a good old thing there. But if you're talking about Lightroom, Lightroom's a repository index. So is your repository got to be in the cloud?
No, you can use it offline, but you can sync it.
So you can just have thumbnails in the cloud of where stuff is on your local drives and use and manipulate. So you haven't got to store all of your stuff in their cloud.
No, but you can also retrieve it. E.g., if you're sitting there on your iPad or something, you can go via the cloud back to your system and get what you want. So you don't have to be carrying it around. Mm. As for a moving around artist, photographer, web creator, designer, and I think this is a very, very good solution.
I think that's incredible. I really am floored. Now, I mean, you know, I had some questions when I first read the article very briefly. I had some questions in my head that were about, well, where's my image got to be? Who owns my image? This sounds good, too good to be true to a certain degree. Russ in the chat room saying he's using it, and he says, no, it's exactly what you've just said. You don't have to have the repository up in the cloud. It's all of your own access. And I'm sharpening the credit card as we speak.
It's going to take off big time. I don't think they've pushed it quite hard enough, but I think they could link this with a more consumer-based product like a Lightroom or something. Not Lightroom. The Adobe one, Elements.
Elements.
They could link this with an Elements-type structure, and I think the what does Apple do? They do the iPhoto and all that, and they do stream sharing and all that business. I think this could be a realistic, real alternative for not only the professional but for the amateur market as well.
Oh, interesting point here from Russ in the chat room. He says if you've got a previous version of CS that goes back to CS3, you get a reduced price for the first year on top of that as well as. So that's really that's it. Then I'm done. Yeah. I've got to go, Phyllis. See ya.
Well, here's the great thing. I was thinking about doing it just for Photoshop.
Yeah.
Just for Photoshop, it made financial sense for me to do it.
No,
but on top of that, now I can get Lightroom on top of it, which I was thinking of purchasing anyway. I mean, you know, Lightroom, relative price speaking, is relatively inexpensive. But on top of that, I can get Illustrator, I can get InDesign, I can get Dreamweaver, I can get Premiere, I can get Audition or whatever it is for doing DVDs. I mean,
there's free website creation tool as well with it. So,
you know,
which is if you got, I mean, we've got UK2 doing the site builder stuff, which is site builder's excellent, but, you know, it sounds like Adobe would have some good software for that.
Mm-hmm.
And you think as well that you'd hope that being who they are, it would be very well compliant with structures, site maps, et cetera, accessibility, those kind of things. If they've got templates in there too, that would be fabulous.
And I think this is the future. This really is the future of how we are going to – professional software, this is the future of how we're going to get hold of it. There is no point whatsoever in buying £2,000 worth of software anymore. Just rent what you need, and you'll get the updates when they come out.
Maxim's just put in the chat room, back that far, ? He's impressed. Russ has chipped in again with another thing. You can install the apps on two computers as well, either Mac and or PC, so you're not tied to one platform with your two licenses, which they're very good at, I have to say. I mean, I've got two licenses, one for desktop, one for Mac, that come through on the same bundle. And when it lapses or if the Mac crashes and I have to reinstall, I call them up, job done. They're effortless with that kind of stuff. Maxim comes back very tempted, very tempted. I've got all the PC, all the video stuff on the PC, and the rest goes on my Mac, says Russ. So yeah, thumbs up from everyone. I thought we might not be quite so popular about that one, but it's been very good. Do you really want to talk about Hasselblad giving away a free how-to on configuring their phone?
Get on to the questions.
I'll give you a 10-second on that, because I took the trouble to download it and look at it.
All right.
It's what I specialize in. It's what I do, and I'm really, really, really was really worried that Hasselblad were going to give away all my secrets, and I've downloaded and looked at it,
and
it's very good, but you really, really, really need to have, I'm not blowing my own trumpet, but you need the level of my knowledge even to understand what they're talking about. So as far as I'm concerned, great, they can do what they like, because nobody other than a few of us is even going to understand it.
Jolly good. There we go. And also there's an explanation of why Lumix, that, if only, there's an explanation why Leica produced a monochrome M9 camera and what the benefits are. And Yeah, we've done long enough on that story.
Because there's still some people out there with some money they need to lose.
Leica have lost it. Absolutely lost it. Here we go then, on with the show notes. And the first thing is six things. What six tips or tricks or tools can you recommend for capturing truly stunning sunsets and sunrises? Chris, start us off one.
Number one, patience.
Yeah, well, no, the sun will come.
Not if you live here. It's 6 months without it, I think.
Tripod, absolutely.
Yeah, you want great, huge, huge depths of thrills. You're up to, you know, if your lens can go up to 36, take it. 22 minimum. 11 at least.
I quite like to underexpose sunsets and sunrises. I think they work. It warms up the colours quite a lot if you underexpose it. It's very, very easy to get highlights and burn
off. Digital?
I take it we're talking about digital here.
Yeah. I was just curious.
Yeah, I tend to underexpose it. I mean, simply, I would take the exposure from the middle of the levels of the shot, and then I would use the, what do you call it, exposure compensation, and just do it minus 0.3 or whatever it is. Just underexpose it a little bit, because the warmer colours stay a lot warmer if you underexpose.
Mm-hmm. Chat rooms, keep the squeaky toy, keep the sun's attention. Very good. My first one would be always take an October. It's good to have a September and an October in the bag whenever you go out shooting the sun. The reason being, A, you get three extra hours in bed. And the other one is, during the summer, what you'll find is that the ground is very warm overnight. So when the sun comes up, it's very pure, very clean. And if you really want that shot, that's fine. This is purely a personal preference on my part. What I like to see is the September-October period. You've got fantastic colours in the trees as well if you've got outdoor. Of course, you're outdoor to sunshine. You know what I mean? If you're out in a field or something. But the other thing is, as the sun comes up and it starts to warm the ground, especially if you've had a dew or a slight frost or rain, you'll start to see lots more interesting vapour and stuff like that popping up in places, which will give you depths and layers as well back through hills and trees and that kind of thing. So always take a September or an October.
I'll tell you what else is nice going along the lines. If you're going to do a winter one, how about doing it in black and white? Because you get...
Why not buy an M9 specifically for the purpose? Yeah, you buy an M9.
But if you do it in a coldish day, you're right, you get the tones. But once you convert, and you've got to convert it properly, unless you buy an M9 or whatever it's called, once you convert it to black and white, you get the sense of cold at the same time as you get the sunrise. It's quite an interesting shot. And if you're doing the across-the-field sunrise, if you do the long shot with a tree in the distance and the big sky and everything, Ewan's quite right. You get that mist that actually comes from the ground up, and that makes an amazing shot. And if you've got time, make it a long exposure as well. Let that mist move around for a couple of seconds within the image so you get sort of a ghostly mist as opposed to a hard mist. There's loads of things you can do if you do it in black and white.
Right.
It's a lot harder to get that right in colour, though.
That's Alex's second. Chris, have you got a second?
I was just going to say one thing we didn't really talk about, and maybe it's obvious to some people, but stick with your low ISO settings, like 100. And again, you know, use the tripod and adjust your exposure accordingly, but you're going to get much
and therefore
much
cable
cleaner
release.
Images.
Yeah. My last one is thinking hemispheres as well for light. So if you think of, I look straight at the sun, not into the sun, obviously, but straight in the direction of the sun, and then I think of a hemisphere that's in front of me and then a hemisphere that's behind me, and I look directly away from the sun. Think about changing where you sit in that hemisphere, and the more that you turn through that hemisphere, the more opacity you're going to get in the air. So straight at the sun, you'll probably get reasonably clear, and then you'll start to get very opaque very quickly. And then when you're directly pointing away from the sun, you'll probably get very good clarity again. So again, thinking two hemispheres and where you position yourself. So either direct or at 90 degrees, 45 degrees, and think of splitting up the 360 by those 45 degree increments to change the view that you get. There you go. Right. Question one. Love the show, guys. Thanks very much. Been a regular listener for a while now. I've got a question I want to ask and hope you can provide the answer. I know the majority of photos are now shared digitally, but I was hoping you could suggest a good way to have my photos produced in a glossy photo book type format. I know that Apple and a few other retailers do this service, but was wondering if you've ever used any of the other services, and is there anyone that you can recommend? Barry of Chelmsford. Chris?
The only one that I've used personally is Apple, and I honestly recommend it.
Mm-hmm.
They do a pretty, I mean, it's great. I mean, it came out exactly like I wanted.
Yeah,
it was reasonably priced.
I've used Apple, and they are excellent. I mean, the quality of the books is superb, definitely. Alex?
I mean, I've only ever used sort of my processors to organize it. The only thing you've got to remember if you want to do these books is you're doing all the manipulation, you're doing all the cropping, you're doing all the, you know, you want to get your colors right, you want to get your tones, you want to get your contrast. So if you are confident in your ability to use their template, drop things in and make them the way you want them, then great. But there are companies out there that will basically sit down with you. It obviously costs more money, but they will sit down with you. You'll give them the images and they will work with you as a designer. And they're the only ones I've used because of basically I wasn't paying the bill. So I went to the most professional place I could go. But I've never heard a bad thing about Apple's version, to be honest. And I mean, you, Jessup's and places like that, they all do it for you. But I haven't heard a bad word about Apple when it comes to now, these books.
Yeah, I was going to say, though, that the new photo book options that are, I think, in the new Lightroom 4 are the templates are really, really good. I haven't got a chance to play with them, but a colleague that works at ours did the review, and he said they were, I mean, pretty amazing. And they even have like some type options and things that you can optionally add to them. And he basically said, you know, imagine a professional sat down with InDesign and came up with these templates. That's what Adobe's providing with Lightroom. So the template's really nice. I don't know what kind of service, if they have a built-in service it connects to, or if you have to find your own service to produce them, but just from the, you know, the production standpoint, as far as getting the images into pages, apparently Lightroom is a really good tool for that.
Very, very good, yeah. My experience is Apple, but also I've used photobox.com, .co.uk, and they're extremely good as well. And one thing I like about Photobox, which keeps bringing me back to them, is if something goes wrong, their customer services to support that and rectify it is significantly better than anyone else I've come across. And I sent up a book for them to produce, and they sent one image back in it, and the image was just, it was really pale, and it was, the red was way too high on it. And I said, you know, this isn't looking right. And the girl looked at the pictures on the end of the phone. She said, no, that doesn't look right. Do you want to send it us again and we'll have another go? So I sent the whole file through, and I thought, I'll redo that image just in case it was something in the processing. And it came back and it was absolutely perfect. And I found out afterwards that it was my fault. I'd sent up a CMYK TIFF instead of sending up an RGB. And but they still made a whole new book, and they didn't ask for the other one back or anything. So I was very impressed, very, very impressed with their after sales.
Can I just make one quick point? The only time I've ever seen these look terrible is that quite often you get people that do them for events and you do them for weddings and various things. And the error people make is they try and use an image that they've shot as the wraparound image for the front, round to the back, and the whole cover thing. Mm-hmm. If you want a detail, shoot a detail. Because if nothing looks worse is when it's the main thing you see when you pick up the book, when you've got something that's been pushed just too far to be the wraparound for the cover. Because remember, the wraparound for the cover, you really need something like a 50 megabyte file, unless you shoot the detail that you want on the cover first. So bear in mind when you're making your book, either don't wrap around the cover. You can put an image on the cover, you can do something, but don't wrap it around unless you've got an image which is shot specifically for that, because it really does. The first impression is what matters, really. And the first impression, every time I've seen someone do it, it's really let the book down. The inside's been lovely, but just bear in mind the cover. Don't push the cover too far.
Question two. Hi, Alex, Chris, Ewan and Carl. Thanks for the shows. This might prove to be a silly question, so I'm going to do it under the guise of anonymity to stop embarrassing myself. How often is one supposed to clean the lenses on one's cameras? Well, you speak using the term one already, so we know your royalty. I've got a Canon G9, and it seems to attract smudges on the lens that can result in very soft-looking images. I use a soft, lint-free cloth to clean the lens down, and then Do you recommend an alternative method? I'll start this one off because there is so much utter and total bollocks talked about cleaning lenses. No, I didn't bleep missies. The point is, anything that you've got, yes, it's great to use something like, you know, the Pentax optical cloths and that kind of thing, or use a blower and those kind of things. I use the Pentax shirt. I use my shirt nearly all the time. I carry rags in my pocket and I still use my shirt. So if you're at a wedding, ties are great. You hardly wear them as long as you use the side that you don't spill the soup on. Anything cleans anything. It's glass. It's got coatings on it, but you're not going to take those coatings off by using a piece of silk or by using a piece of cotton. Clean it with whatever you got and clean it as frequently as you can. That's my view.
I was going to say, yeah, you should clean it whenever it's dirty, but maybe it's worth looking at why you're getting smudges on your lens so often. That's what I'm curious about.
Leaving it with the kids.
If you're getting smudges on it, I can definitely clean it off. And I will say I have used the Pentax cloths and they are the best. I've used, like, I would say 2 or 3 dozen different types of lens cloths, and the Pentax ones are absolutely the best. So I have a couple around here, one in my camera bag too at all times, just in case. I guess I baby my stuff. So I try to just never get a smudge on it to begin with. I have on occasion used a shirt. If it's 100% cotton shirt, I've used a shirt to clean a lens when I'm in a pickle.
Last week I was shooting an oil leak on a piece of machinery, and I had video going, and the guy cracked the pipe and said, right, start the machine up, and then it'll go everywhere. And I thought, I'm well back. I've got this sorted. Nothing's going to happen. One huge glob of oil defied gravity to travel 30 feet and put itself smack on the middle of me 50mm lens. It wiped off. Alex, finished off?
What I do, and I've always done it, and it's because I'm a glasses wearer as well, I have 2 handkerchiefs in my pocket. I have one for the normal use of a handkerchief, e.g. I have runny eyes or runny nose or whatever you use handkerchief for, and I have a good quality, I tend to use silk, but a good quality handkerchief in the other pocket. I always have 2 handkerchiefs. I use one to clean my glasses and my lenses, and the other one as an all handkerchief, and I've done that for 20 years. I've just checked, and I have 1 handkerchief in each pocket of my trousers as we speak, and I'm not even at work. It's just a habit I do.
Such a pro. Such a pro.
Well, if I didn't do it every day, I would forget it on the day that I needed it. So that's why I do it.
Question 3. Hi, everyone. I recently found the photo shoot due to the Mac show, which I listen to, and I'm a total iPhone and Apple fanboy. I was wondering if professional photographers like yourself see the rise of iPhonography as cheating, or as it appears to allow some outstanding creativity without any actual knowledge. I'm not suggesting my iPhone would replace any of you soon, but I was wondering how you stood on the matter. Love the shows. Keep up the great work. Paul in Cambridge. Thank you, Paul. Very kind, mate. Iphonography, is it a cheat, Alex?
No, of course it's not. It's a means to an end. If you want to print something which is a really nice, good quality 20 by 16 print, you're going to struggle on an iPhone. What the iPhone has done for loads and loads of people, it's meant that they can be creative. They can find an avenue. They can enjoy photography. And that's a wonderful, wonderful thing. It's not going to take away what I do for a living, what Ewan does for a living, and what most photographers do for a living. If you're a photographer and you can be put out of business by the iPhone, then maybe you shouldn't necessarily be a photographer in the first place.
Yeah, that's a good point. Chris?
That's smug but true, I think. I love using my iPhone to take pictures, but it's a tool with its limits. And, you know, I find it sometimes challenging to work within its limits. Sometimes I find it frustrating to work within its limits. So is it going to take awesome professional level pictures in all situations? No. Could I take a picture with it that could be used professionally? Yes, and I've done it all the time. I've done it even with my original my iPhone 3G, which was 2 megapixels, but I took pictures with it that were used in certain professional settings. So, it's not, you know, people with iPhones aren't going to replace professionals. But, you know, what it does replace is all those hundreds of different, you know, Instamatic cameras, even the Polaroid cameras, you know, people using disposable cameras back in the day. I mean, it replaces that those kind of uses where it's like snapshots. You just need to record something for some reason, like maybe insurance or something to that effect. You know, just capturing an event, capturing that time you were with a certain person. And I think what's maybe more interest, or I should say what's more exciting or what people really like is that because it's connected to the internet at all times, you have to not just capture these images, but you can share them and communicate with them really quickly.
Mm.
So I think that's maybe like the most innovative thing about the iPhone compared to previous, you know, snapshot cameras. And obviously, I think it's the appeal of it over, you know, even like basic snapshot cameras. A lot of people simply use their iPhone instead of carrying around a separate camera for that reason, because you have that instant connection, that instant communication and sharing capability. But yeah, it's not. I mean, it's not going to take over for a 5D Mark III with a, you know, an L series glass anytime soon.
Excellent. No, I think. I use my iPhone an awful lot. It's out there. I use it on jobs. I've taken pictures with it that I've then used to cut up for video projects. The 1080p video on it. I've just bought myself a helicopter, and I'm looking at a way of mounting my iPhone on the helicopter and seeing what footage I can get out of it, or looking for a little GoPro thing to have a play with. So I think the iPhone's excellent. I've really switched onto it in the last sort of 3 to 6 months, definitely. Since I got the 4S, it's just superb, absolutely superb. So I don't think it's a cheat at all. I think it's another tool.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's actually inspired me seeing what other people have done with an iPhone. Because as a photographer, I tended to go out, did my pictures because I got paid for it, and come home, and the last thing I wanted to do was take a picture. I see what people have done with their iPhone, and I actually get out some proper cameras sometimes, and I go out, and it's actually inspired me to go, you know what, that's such a good picture. I wonder if I can do something like that. So it's actually helped us. It's reinvigorated some of us professionals to enjoy photography again.
I've got a real treat for you then, because if you come to the bash, there's a lady coming who makes a profession out of taking pictures with iPhones. And she's extremely good. I've seen a couple of her pictures. Paul Kirkle's bringing her over, and she's going to record our bash. So next Friday, this time next week, I will be drunk smelling pig cooking. I promise. Watching pig, dripping pig fat. The British Tech Bash is next week. It's Friday the 6th of July, 2012. You can get a ticket at britishtechbash.eventbrite.co.uk. It's 20 quid. That just helps towards getting the stuff all in, buying the beer. We've got oodles of beer. TechSmith are sponsoring the event as well. And there's lots of prizes and lots of giveaways taking place on the day too. And if you come along, you're guaranteed a good time, and you're probably guaranteed to walk away with something as a result of having been here. Paul Kirkle's coming. He's done some iPad art for the event, and he's got some prints of that to give away. NSPCC is the charity that we're running the event for. So we're going to have a little kind of like an auction or a donations thing to give some prizes away. And it's all going to go to Will Green's charity, which is NSPCC. So please come if you can. It's here in Birmingham, britishtechbash.eventbrite.co.uk. And you never know what you may walk away with. You'll definitely walk away with a full belly and a pile of beer. So just come. But like I said, she's going to come and take some pictures, so it should be fantastic. This podcast and all of the others would not be possible without the wonderful support of UK2. They are the people that keep us afloat. We love them to bits. And we've been approached by Hover this week to do some advertising for them. And there was a whole pile of conditions about what we could and couldn't do and all those kind of things and how they were going to measure us. UK2 just support us. There's no conditions about what we do or don't have to do for UK2. They just quite happily pick up the bandwidth, droll away in the background, and when we've got trouble, they give us our own guy to fix it. They're superb. They look after us. We're not going to go anywhere. Not going to go with anyone else. We're sticking with UK2. If you want their services, they're dead easy. You just go to britishtechnetwork.com and you click on their logo, go through. You'll get some codes on the way. British Tech DNS wipes your DNS management charge. British Tech domains give you 20%, no one else does 20%, off your domains that you've purchased, VPN, VPS, all of that kind of stuff. There's a whole load of codes for you there, and you get massive reductions. Put your code in and hit return before you put in your payment details, and you can keep adding codes in and hitting return, and it'll slowly pull your basket down. And then when you've got all the discounts that you're due, put your code in, and you're put your payment details in rather, and you're away. Please support UK2. They pick up they've picked up nearly 20 terabytes of data this month for us. The Mac show the week before last had 108,000 downloads, so that took a hell of a quantity of bandwidth off them. We love them to bits. Please support UK2, because if they go away, we go away. We can't afford it. Thanks ever so much to them. Right, guys, where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Forsman?
You can get a hold of me at rstechnica.com and also via Twitter at Forsmac.
Cheers, mate. Thank you very much. You're a bit busy this afternoon, so you're not doing Mac, are you, at the moment?
No.
Best of luck, mate. Whatever
Sorry.
It is. Keep that MacBook Pro as much as you can, because we've enjoyed your higher quality, most definitely. And Mr. Fox, where are you, pal?
You can get me on Alex G. Fox at Twitter. You can't expect Chris to miss his own wedding just to do the Mac show, can you?
Was he doing a wedding? You were getting married this afternoon, Chris?
Not that I'm aware of.
Does your girlfriend know?
Yeah. I don't know, and she doesn't know, so I guess not.
We've seen the dog walker. We know what's going on.
All the shows here next week live, starting off with the photo show at 2 o'clock. Every show will be live. Every show will be live. So there's no big on Thursday night. It's going to be on Friday night instead now. We'll start at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and we'll podcast through the rest of the afternoon. Ellis wants to come here and do a Drunks and the Dude with all of the guys that are and girls that are here. So you can quiz him thoroughly, and he'll make you laugh. We'll have a great time. Come to the Bash next week, Friday. See you there.
Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.